To our 3:00 oral argument here today. We have one case on set for argument. Before we start, I'll introduce the panel that we have. To my left is Justice Brian Walker. To my right, Justice Mike Wallach, and I'm Elizabeth Kerr. I understand the attorneys have all checked in, and we're ready to go, I guess, if the clerk will call the case.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. I'm going to try to cover three main areas this afternoon if I can. The first is, as I kind of went back and looked over this case, I really think there's the key dispositive issue is whether we met our burden to establish that a duty exists in this case. I think there's other issues that are thorny, but I think the main area that I believe to be key is whether we provided sufficient evidence to demonstrate facts that, if they exist, a duty would arise. The second area I want to cover is obviously the H&MC case from the Supreme Court that was handed down in January. Has some similar facts, but I think a little bit overlapping, but not really controlling of this case. And then third, I want to address the negligence per se issues that were raised by the response brief. To the first issue on the evidence, this is an appeal from a no evidence and a traditional summary judgment motion. The no evidence motion was a kitchen sink no evidence motion that attacked every element of every claim we had raised against the Rydells. Our fundamental theory of duty in this case was that, or at least a fundamental theory of duty, and the one I think I'd like to talk about here is whether the Rydells' conduct, or whether there's sufficient evidence that a reasonable fact finder could conclude that their conduct contributed to creating a danger on the road that caused this accident. Of course, this is not the first time this court's seen these facts. The basic facts are that there was a tractor trailer parked in a busy road in a lane of travel in an area where traffic could not pass by it. Bad conditions. I'm going to take for granted that that's a dangerous condition and focus on whether the Rydells had some contributory negligence is the theory.
Well, don't you have to get to duty first, the Rydells?
Well, that's what yes, Justice Wallach. The duty, the way that no evidence challenges to duty and negligence cases are a little bit complicated because duty is a question of law, but facts can be found that would give rise to a duty that you might need a fact finder to be present to decide whether there is a duty. And the theory of duty that I would present is creating the danger duty. That's an old duty that has existed in tort law for a long time. We rely on the United Rentals case from the Supreme Court that kind of applies that duty in the context of motor vehicles on a highway. And the competing theory is the Rydells were landowners where this delivery was taking place, and their status as landowners kind of pulls this into a premises liability case. And because they didn't own or control the public road, there's no duty. I think.
But isn't it uncontested that the driver was driving his truck, pulled up and stopped, and only he could move it? He had sole control of the use of the truck, did he not?
I would agree he was in control of the truck itself. I think if I could walk through some of the evidence, this is the best evidence. I think if we don't get there on this evidence, I think the bystander theory would probably work, right? The Rydells are kind of claiming we're bystanders, we're landowners. We didn't contribute at all to this, to creation of this danger. But the evidence, that we, Mr. McIntosh testified that for residential deliveries like he was making, he was asked the question in his deposition, who decides where to park the truck to make the delivery? And he testified that it was the driver and or the customer that makes that decision. And that's for residential deliveries. He said it's different for commercial deliveries, but that was his testimony.
So, and was that the sum total of his testimony, that it was the driver and or?
So that's part of it, right? That's an important piece. But the context of his testimony is that Mrs. Rydell had called, there had been conversations between Mrs. Rydell and the delivery driver, basically to the effect of, you're not going to be able to pull your 18-wheeler in our driveway. You need to go figure out a different way to do it, or you need to find, you know, her husband, Rodney. She said, look for him in their ATV. He was going to pull down there, and actually both of them, after talking to Mr. McIntosh, drove down to the side of the road. When Mr. McIntosh crests the hill that we're talking about, Mr. Rydell flashes the lights of his ATV, and Mr. McIntosh's testimony is that he drove to where Mr. Rydell had kind of signaled him to come. And so it's that testimony of the customer and or the delivery driver in the context of these facts, that there were conversations that he acted consistent with. He pulled where they wanted him to pull. They pulled within 8 to 10 feet of the ATV.
I haven't read the whole record, but there was testimony, wasn't there, that Mr. Rydell told the driver, you know, hey, you need to pull off the road some. And is it your argument that despite his saying that, he proceeded to go ahead and help unload the freight while the 18-wheeler was parked in the lane of traffic? And that was...
That Mr. Rydell proceeded to help?
Yes.
That's definitely an argument. So it's not just the initial stopping of the truck that's the obstruction, right? That's definitely an obstruction. The accident didn't happen immediately. The truck is parked there for a period of time, and during that period of time, here's everything that happened. Mr. Rydell goes and talks to the delivery driver. He does, according to his testimony, say, you need to move this truck. Mr. McIntosh doesn't do it. Mr. Rydell follows Mr. McIntosh to the back of the truck. Then Mr. Rydell proceeds back to his ATV.
Doesn't that give us a pretty clear idea of who has control of the placement of the truck when the driver does what he's going to do, regardless of what someone tells him, in their opinion, he should do?
I'm going to argue that a reasonable fact finder could take all of. I'm not going to dispute that if a jury was to look at this, likely they're going to find they could find Mr. McIntosh 100% responsible. I think a fact finder could find that. I think they also could find him mostly responsible.
But doesn't the issue of duty turn on control under these circumstances?
I think that's the premises theory. I don't know that that's correct. Creating the danger is a theory in which a duty arises no matter whether you control a premises or not. And we've cited some cases in our...
Creating the danger arises from the premises here. The premises is it's a highway, correct?
I don't think these are premises cases. I don't think...
I'm not talking about... But this occurrence took place on a highway, and what makes it dangerous is it is on a highway, correct?
With the other facts that were, yes, that's dangerous. There were other factors that were not. I just want to make sure it's dark, foggy.
If it wasn't parked on a highway, we wouldn't be under these circumstances, right? That is a key critical issue.
The location of the truck on the highway is, the accident doesn't happen if it's not there. But it also doesn't happen if it's there for a shorter period of time than it's there. The question I think that the jury would be asked to answer is, why was it there when the accident happened, right? Not who actually originally stopped it. Why was it there when the accident happened? And if you look at the evidence, it's there for a long enough period of time for this accident to happen. And a jury could find that if the Rydells had not gone down there and participated, if they had not gone down there and prolonged its presence, that the truck may not have stopped there. The only reason it stopped there is because in conjunction with the Rydells, Mrs. Rydell, and all the conversations that happened before the truck driver arrives, is they had arranged that that's where he's going to stop. And yes, he's in control of stopping the truck there, but there is a reasonable conclusion that can be drawn from the fact that the Rydells prolonged its presence there long enough for this accident to happen. Because if Mr. Rydell doesn't get in his ATV, get on the road, prolong the presence of the truck there, there's no testimony that the truck driver is going to stop the truck there if the Rydells aren't down there. So I guess I want to make that point.
Going back to the issue of control of the truck, Mr. Rydell doesn't get into the truck and start offloading materials if the truck driver tells him, no, we're not going to do it here, right?
Sorry, Mr. Rydell didn't hop in the tractor trailer?
The trailer, yeah.
He did. I don't think that's the testimony. Right, so I don't think he did that, I guess is my answer to that.
Well, he assisted in the offloading, right, which is what prolonged it.
He did do that. He pulled his ATV, he had to pull his ATV up, back it up to the truck, get out and help, and then sign paperwork. So, yes, that's the conduct that.
But if the truck driver, who he controls how and where the offloading occurs, correct?
I mean, I agree that the truck driver can drive the truck wherever he wants. I agree that the truck driver is in control of the truck.
Okay.
I just disagree that that's the only the duties can't arise when you look at all of the circumstances of this case.
Well, did Mr. McIntosh, excuse me, disagree that in his conversations with Mrs. Rydell that she had said, you know, look, if you aren't able to pull onto our concrete pad, just keep going because it's dangerous. Did he rebut that? Isn't that what she said?
I don't know that I can't remember if she said that she told him that or if that was what her testimony was as to her subjective state of mind. I'm sorry, I just really don't remember the record on that. Mr. McIntosh, I do think Mr. McIntosh's testimony is clear that the reason he pulled where he pulled was because Mr. Rydell signaled him to pull there, combined with the evidence that Mrs. Rydell told him, you're not going to be able to pull in our driveway, look for Mr. Rydell at the side of the road. So the truck driver is in control of the truck in terms of, yes, he's the one that stops it. That's the initial obstruction, but the obstruction is there for a long enough period of time, right? So if he just pulls on, no accident happens. It's the evidence that Mr. Rydell, even if he told the truck driver to move, nobody made the Rydells get onto the road and prolong the presence of this truck.
What was it about the ATV that prolonged the presence of the truck?
I mean, there's no testimony about how many seconds or minutes did this take, but if you look at the record and you view it in the light favorable to my clients, he has to get out of his ATV and go talk to the truck driver. Then he goes around the back of the truck, then he walks back to his ATV, he gets in his ATV, pulls it on the road, and then he backs it up to the truck, gets out of his ATV, helps, you know, move the freight to the ATV, signs paperwork in the middle of the road, and then pulls off. And there's evidence in the record, while there's no timing sequence there, there's evidence in the record that Mrs. Rydell's testimony was that they had only driven 250 feet, was her approximation from the truck. So they pull off and they get 250 feet up the road, which to their primary driveway, when the accident happens.
Couldn't you make the assumption that if they had not pulled up in an ATV to unload the truck, but instead the driver had to unload the truck himself and then bring those materials over, that the delivery over to them somehow, that would actually take more time?
I don't think there's any evidence in the record that the truck driver would have stopped where the truck was stopped, absent the Rydells being down there. I just think the record is void of that. Maybe that could come out. Maybe that would come out at trial. The truck driver says, "Well, if Mr. Rydell's not down there, this is what I would have done." But I don't recall that being any in the record at all. And so, if he would have stopped there, and that's the facts. Obviously, the Rydells don't have any responsibility, right? I would agree that that would be sort of a garden variety delivery where, you know, the truck driver is always, he comes and he decides where to pull and he stops. And I don't think we would be here arguing that the Rydells had responsibility.
Judge Kerr asked this question, and this is what I remember based on what I read in preparation for this, that Mrs. Rydell, in fact, told him that if he did not think that he was going to be able to pull into the property, then he would just need to keep going because the roadway was unsafe. Is that?
I just can't remember if she told that to the truck. I do remember that something like that's in the record. I don't remember if it's her testifying that she told him that, or if it's her stating that was what her intentions were. But I'll grant it, yeah. Right?
Well, so according to the Appellee's brief, and I assume that they're referring to her summary judgment affidavit, I assume, because this is from the clerk's record. She spoke directly with McIntosh on at least three separate occasions prior to his arrival, explaining how it would be difficult for him to be able to pull into the driveway or the concrete pad, since he likely would not be able to turn around to get back out. She further told him that if he was unable to get into the driveway or concrete pad, there was no other safe place for him to park and to discontinue the delivery. So.
And if that's true, it's some evidence. You concede that.
May I respond? I've got my red light.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
I would, I'll just grant for a second. Let's just assume that that's the testimony. The focus of this case is on the Rydell's conduct, right? There's nothing, nobody made them go down there and wait on the truck driver. Nobody made them go down there, and they're subjectively aware this is dangerous. It's, I think, an unreasonable inference to suggest that because the truck driver told them we can do this, that they weren't sort of aware of the danger. But the focus is still on their conduct. If they tell him it's dangerous and he decides to do it anyway, I'm not sure that it just negates their conduct. I think that's.
But so at that point, it would be the fact that they then, you know, they know that the truck is parked in a dangerous spot, yet they say, you know, what the heck, it's here, let me help, you know, load the stuff, let me get the stuff onto my ATV and sign the paperwork.
Right, that's what I'm relying, that's what I'm, I think that's the evidence that's the strongest for my argument, and that would be the evidence that I would rely on.
If I may, and they wouldn't have done that, essentially, unless they felt that they had some kind of duty.
The Rydells wouldn't have done?
Gone down there.
I think that they were just behaving negligently, right? I mean, I think that's I don't know what they thought, if they had a duty or not, right? But I do think their conduct I'm making a contributory argument, right? That they contributed, whether it's 10%, 20%, contributed to the dangerous situation that resulted in the accident.
Okay, thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Josh Norell. I'm the attorney for the Rydells.
Would you mind pulling that microphone a little closer to yours? I mean, we have a lot of air conditioning noise behind us, so it's hard to hear.
Yes, ma'am. Thanks. Is that any better?
Yes.
Okay. I'd like to begin with what Justice Wallach asked several times, and Justice Walker followed up on, and Justice Kerr, you actually read from Appellee's brief, page 17. I was headed there before you read that excerpt. And if the court will turn back to page 16, the court will see that the issue of control is the fundamental issue in this case, because I don't disagree with appellant's reply brief that the court at some stage is going to have to discern if this should be treated as a premises case in accordance with the recent Chan opinion, or if it should be treated as a negligence case. But irrespective of that, if it's treated as a premises case, appellees will stand on their briefing with respect to Chan and the fact that a collision did not occur on the Rydell's property. It occurred on a public roadway that just happened to be adjacent to their property. But even giving appellants every benefit of the doubt to want to couch this as a negligence case, as every plaintiff wants to, the fact is there was just no control over that truck by the Rydells. McIntosh was a professional driver. He was an employee of a company that had been hired. He was trained, licensed, bonded. As Justice Wallach pointed out, he's the one that had the keys. He's the one that made the decisions. And in fact, in Appley's brief at the bottom of page 16, determining where to park while delivering freight was and ultimately is always left up to the delivery driver of the truck, according to his employer.
Well, what about the appellant's argument that, you know, the Rydells knew that this was a dangerous spot and they had warned the driver you know, hey, keep driving if you can't turn onto our concrete pad because you won't be able to get out. So I maybe it's slicing and dicing a little bit too much, but help me think through why, even though the driver decided where to park, the Rydells knew that that was a really dangerous spot for the truck to be there. Wouldn't Mr. Rydell or Mrs. Rydell have at that point been much better off to say, hey, just keep going, we'll reschedule this for another day?
Justice Kerr, yes, they would. And I think that Ms. Rydell even stated in as much on page 17 as you read. What I would respond with is this. This takes me back to many years ago with all the construction cases and right of control issue. Warning of a dangerous situation does not inculpate a party to take on a duty.
Okay. Well, except that I think appellant's argument is that they pretty much took on some duty by seeing the truck there and just going, okay, let's just get this unloaded and I'll turn around the ATV and back it up and sign paperwork. I mean, is there at what point in the spectrum, I mean, because it's not an absolute, I wouldn't think, you know, you can certainly do some things that are going to help create a dangerous circumstance. So where would you have us draw the line?
Well, Justice Kerr, I would start with, if you have a party that's been convicted of a Class B misdemeanor, I think you could start there. McIntosh was convicted in Parker County of obstruction. He appealed that. That was by a jury.
Well, and that was after the fact.
Okay. I would also point the court's attention to look for a spectrum or a guideline set. I would call the court's attention to page 16 of Appley's brief, where there's a string cite here of various cases discerning when has control been asserted, when is it not. If the contractor is not entirely free to do the work in his own way, but it also, the courts have held that there's no duty of care with a general right to order the work to start or stop, to direct when and where the work is done, or to require that the work be done by a certain time. So if the court wants to parse out the specific details, and we certainly ask that you do, it's our contention that the control issue is not going to be met in this case. And just for the record, please, I do not concede that this is not a premises case. Our position is very much that it is. I'm just trying to, for argument's sake today, discuss the fact that McIntosh was an independent contractor, and I believe that that point has not been emphasized properly, because regardless of which theory, whether premises or negligence, as appellants assert, there's still going to be a right of control inquiry in our position.
Yes, let me ask the question this way, and it might essentially be the same question as Justice Kerr's question, but it's a little bit different. I guess, how would you respond if I asked you, how is the fact that the Rydells went down and essentially participated in taking the delivery out of the truck not contributory in nature? How is that not contributing to the negligence?
Justice Walker, I think, at least in my understanding, you still have to get past the presumptive element of duty. If they are there, it would be like an Amazon truck. In our neighborhood, we have Amazon trucks all day, and they always park right in the middle of the street for some reason. If I don't know that a homeowner has a duty to now, if you walk out and you take a box from an Amazon driver, have you done something to contribute? And if so, did that contributory nature trigger the duty? My answer would be, sir, I don't think so. I think you have to start with the duty first, and ultimately, someone's going to have to be responsible for that delivery, whether it was McIntosh in this case or an Amazon driver. That would be my response, sir.
You don't think that there could be scenarios where more than one party both has a duty, that the driver has a duty, the delivery driver in the delivery, he has a duty, and then the recipient who's participating and receiving that package has some kind of duty?
I do, sir, if that right of control inquiry was met. So again, getting back to some of the standards in the Appley's brief, if in a rare situation. If I may, let me present it this way. I was thinking about this today as I was preparing. If the Rydells had hired a family member, a friend, I think this might be an entirely different case. But the fact is they hired a professional driver who works for a professional delivery company, and his own employer said, this is how we do things. And it's similar to the old captain of the ship doctrine, that ultimately it's the driver's decision. Mm-hmm. But to answer your question, sir, yes. If an owner came in and asserted a right to control details or the manner of the work, then I think that would probably qualify as one of these exceptions. And at least in my reading of Chan, I think that's where the Supreme Court is going to. I think they're going to apply the standard, what we know as the standard right of control, to see if there was an exception that might apply. And it's our position that exception does not apply in this case. Any further questions from the court on the duty issue? With the court's permission, I'd like to briefly address the negligence per se, because I anticipate that counsel for appellants wants to talk about that. We'll rest on the cases in our brief, but I honestly think the strongest argument there is that there's no negligence mens rea in Texas Penal Code 42.03. So I just don't even know.
Well, do you have any cases to refute the argument that appellants made in response to your brief, that the previous version of the Penal Code statute had actually been used before in a very old case to say that it's negligent to violate the statute, even if the statute has a different mens rea?
No, ma'am, I do not, because I couldn't find a case. That was our position that we set forth. And trust me, I don't put that kind of language in a brief unless I feel like I've dug every way I could. I just simply could not find a case that applies 4203 in a negligence per se context. And in my position today is I just simply wanted to call the court's attention to the fact that we can talk about the mandatory versus permissible, but honestly, I think the bigger issue, I'm a general practitioner in Parker County. If you were to apply a penal code statute with a mens rea that didn't include negligence and try to use it for negligence per se, that just doesn't make sense to me.
And did you raise that argument in the trial court?
No, ma'am. I wasn't trial counsel in this case. With the court's permission, we'll rest on our briefs. Thank you.
Thank you.
I do have one follow-up to that, because when you look at the Chapter 42 of the Penal Code, and if you look at the conduct that's being addressed, it's talking about public disorder, it's talking about riots, it's talking about blocking roadways. It looks to me like this is a situation, it's talking about if a situation is based upon speech or conduct. I just kind of get the impression that this statute was written for the purpose of getting a bunch of people out in the roadway who are protesting something, and they do it by blocking a roadway. So they say, well, it wasn't me blocking the roadway, it was these other 30 people next to me. And the statute is basically saying that if you're out there and participating in physically blocking the road or obstructing the road, just because there's 30 other people out there doesn't mean you're not responsible. Am I off base on that?
No, sir, Justice Walker. I think you're reading that correctly, and I think possibly that's why the language of the statute anticipates that one or more persons can be held responsible under that statute. And obviously that's why the appellants have wanted to persuade this court to apply it as a negligence per se, because it reinforces their position that somehow there was a joint action, a joint enterprise, action in concert between my clients and Mr. McIntosh. And so, no, Your Honor, I think that's a very fair reading of that. Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to just remind us that we're in the context of a summary judgment motion, and more specifically, I think for me, a no evidence motion for summary judgment that is, as done right now, has effectively precluded us from presenting a full record of evidence, right? So our burden on no evidence motion for summary judgment is to raise a fact issue with a scintilla of evidence, right? So We certainly didn't put all of this, the record, into the summary judgment motions, and there will be more evidence that would be developed at trial, so I want to make sure that we remember that. I also want to...
By the same token, we can't speculate as to what all that other evidence may or may not be.
I agree with that. Want to respond to the evidence that there was statement that there was evidence suggesting that it's the truck driver that's always responsible. There's definitely testimony in there that says that, but there's also conflicting testimony that says that's not true, right? So
isn't that a legal question?
I'm not sure. I haven't seen any authority that says the truck driver is solely responsible for where my truck ends up on a highway. I think there can be facts that would, for example, let's say somebody's just negligently walking in the road and the truck driver has to slam his brakes on and stop. He's definitely stopped the truck, but maybe he's not fully responsible for where that truck ends up. So I'd understand that's a different scenario than one we have here, but I never saw any authority that says a truck driver is always and only responsible for where the truck ends up. I would really ask the court to look at the United Rentals case that we cited in our reply brief. That is where I feel like our strongest case is for the duty we're arguing here, which is creating the danger on a public highway. A lot of the arguments that were raised by the appellees here in terms of who sole responsibility, partial responsibility, a lot of that was raised in the United Rentals case. And the Supreme Court effectively said, based on the evidence in that case, you can have multiple people owe multiple duties, and so therefore you're in a comparative negligence scenario. And that just because somebody else might owe a duty doesn't mean you don't. And that, I think, contrasts with the Chan case, and I think we contrasted that in our brief. I don't think I'm going to be able to distinguish Chan, but...
Well, and I get that's part of what I'm trying to deal with is that Chan is a case involving an adjacent landowner in a public highway and a danger supposedly created on a public highway by an adjacent landowner. That's what we have here, and it's the fact that the Rydells are adjacent landowners, and all of the activities that they engaged in here had to do with the fact that they are adjacent landowners. Why isn't the Chan case what we ought to be looking to rather than United Rentals?
I think there's lots of distinctions in Chan that we raised in our reply brief. Fundamentally, the duties in that case in Chan are different. It was a pedestrian who left a premises that was owned by the defendant, left the premises onto a public highway, and the duty was alleged that premises owner owed a duty to the pedestrian for the careless acts of a third party, right? We're arguing in this case that it's the Rydell's own negligence that's contributed to this accident, not a third party, certainly a third party, but we're not seeking to hold the Rydell's responsible for McIntosh's negligence. We're arguing that the Rydell's have their own independent negligent conduct. The accident in this case isn't just the status as a landowner for the Rydell's is not the only, that's not all that exists here. In Chan, that's all that existed. The premises owner, we're suing the premises owner because they're the premises owner. Here, the Rydells, yes, are landowners, but they hop on the highway and they're engaging, they're driving a car, an ATV, which is a motor vehicle, on the road.
But Chan wasn't just because of their landowners. Chan also had to do with the fact of what the landowners did on the public property.
Or didn't do, I think.
Part of it was what they did, and part of it was what they didn't do with respect to public property, and whether or not that created a duty.
I'm running out of time. I want to definitely also refer the court to Science Spectrum, which is cited in Chan. It's in a footnote. I forget which footnote, but it's in our brief. In Science Spectrum, the court cited that in Chan for the proposition that it had held that even a premises owner is not in control of the premises where the injury occurs, creating the danger, if you contribute to creating the danger, can still support a duty to the landowner. So if we're in premises liability land, I would say we're not, but if we are, even the court in Chan cited its own precedent for that proposition, that summary judgment. You can have creating the danger of duty arise even if you're not controlled premises.
Thank you. I believe you're out of time. So, well, we appreciate the oral argument, gentlemen. It's been very helpful. And with that, your case is submitted, and you're free to go about your afternoon.
So fast.